Hi, my name is Stephen Zunis. I'm an associate professor of politics and chair of the Peace and Justice Studies program at the University of San Francisco. It's a widely held idea that the Palestinian-Israeli conflict is basically intractable, but the best hope is from the United States in bringing peace. I would say it's just the opposite. I think the problem, the conflict is quite solvable, and the United States, in fact, is the biggest obstacle, because I believe that Palestinian rights and Israeli security are not mutually exclusive, but mutually dependent on one another. Israel will not be secure until the Palestinians have their rights, and the Palestinians will not have their rights until Israel is secure. Israel, unlike earlier parts in its history, is quite secure within its internationally recognized borders. It has its armed forces are far more powerful than any combination of Arab armies. They're even relatively safe from cross-border raids because of high-tech border security and the like. Where Israelis are insecure, and the only place where Israelis are really being attacked nowadays, is in the occupied territories. I think just about any Israeli officer will tell you that it is far easier to protect a population on a clearly defined, internationally recognized border than this patchwork of settlements and military outposts within somebody else's land amidst a hostile population. If the Israelis are really concerned about the security of the settlers, they would have them move back to Israel. And they would withdraw their troops from the occupied territories. In fact, they don't have a choice. UN Security Council Resolution 242 basically says quite explicitly, you cannot expand your territory by military force, that Israel has to withdraw in return for security guarantees, which the Palestinian Authority has promised to demilitarize the area, have international monitors, warning stations, no other army come in, et cetera, et cetera. And the settlements, they're illegal. You can, according to the Geneva Conventions, you can't transfer segments of your own population onto land seized by military force. In fact, UN Security Council Resolution 446 explicitly calls for Israel to evacuate the settlements. Now, the United States supposedly is real gung-ho about Security Council Resolution. We're starving thousands of Iraqi children because we're bombing that country every week because we believe that UN Security Council resolutions must be enforced. Yet when it comes to our allies, like Morocco or Turkey or Indonesia or Israel, suddenly we forget about enforcing UN Security Council resolutions. In fact, Secretary of State Madeleine Albright went as far as to say all UN resolutions on the Israeli-Palestinian question are no longer relevant. They were superseded by the Oslo Accords. Now, even my students in Intro International Relations can tell you that no bilateral agreement can supersede United Nations Security Council resolutions, particularly if one of the two parties still says they're relevant and the entire rest of the membership of the Security Council and the Secretary General say they are still relevant. We're taking law into our own hands. Now, legally, the Palestinians do have a right to resist occupation. People under military occupation have a right to resist. Now, personally, I think both morally and strategically, violent resistance to the occupation is wrong. It just reinforces the siege mentality, plays in the hands of Israeli hardliners, and no way they're going to win an armed confrontation against a much superior enemy. I'm afraid what has happened, though, is they've gotten the wrong lesson from Lebanon. Because the United States refuses to enforce UN Security Council Resolution 425 for Israel to pull out of Lebanon, the Israelis end up staying for over 20 years, and the only way they withdrew was from this guerrilla warfare by this Islamic fundamentalist group. And so the Palestinians are saying, a peace process doesn't work. For all these years, it did not work. The U.S. is supposed to be the mediator, wouldn't support international law, wouldn't get Israel to withdraw. In fact, Martin Indyk, our ambassador to Israel and Undersecretary of State, explicitly said to the Israelis he did not think Israel should unilaterally withdraw. So the lesson to them is you can't trust the United States, you can't trust international law. The only way to do it is through armed struggle, which is just the wrong lesson, just the wrong lesson. Now, we know Israel would not even be able to afford this occupation were it not for U.S. aid. Israel is 1/1,000th of the world's population. Israeli Jews have the 16th highest per capita income in the world, yet they get up to 40% of U.S. foreign aid. The United States has used its veto to protect Israel from censor more time since 1970, more than all other members of the Security Council have used their veto on and all other issues since the founding of the United Nations. The United States actually takes a more hardline position than Israel. The U.S. so-called compromise proposal on Palestinian autonomy in June of 1993 was actually less generous than what the Israelis were simultaneously offering in Oslo to the PLO. In fact, the reason the Israelis had to go to Oslo is because the United States refused to allow the PLO into the peace process. The Israelis had to do an end-run around the United States. When Indig was saying Israel shouldn't withdraw, 70% of the Israeli population was saying get the hell out of Lebanon. So the idea that we're a mediator trying to bring the sides together is wrong. Because repeatedly, the United States has taken a position that is more hardline than the Labor government and or the majority of the Israeli population. Well, why does the United States take such a hard line? I don't think it's because we see Israel as this poor democracy under siege from the Arab hordes. If this was the case, we would have given most of our aid and support for Israel in its first 20 years of existence, when its security really was threatened and its democratic institutions were strongest. Instead, 99% of all U.S. aid came after 1967, when Israel proved itself more powerful than any combination of Arab armies and started its occupation and repression of the Palestinians and other Arabs in the occupied territories. I don't even think it's because of the so-called Jewish lobby, frankly. I know foreign policy making isn't that pluralistic to begin with. We didn't need a pro-Indonesia lobby to support the oppression of the East Timorese, or pro-Morocco lobby to support the ongoing oppression of those of Western Sahara. We support Israel for the same reason we support any strategic ally against radical nationalist movements. Now, I mean, think about what Israel does for the United States. Israel sent U.S. arms to third parties like South Africa, the Contras, Iran, U.S. couldn't give to directly. They battle-tested U.S. weapons. The Mossad and CIA worked together in covert operations and intelligence gathering. The military-industrial complexes of the two countries are intertwined, everything from Star Wars to new jet fighters and the like. And anyways, it has a disturbing parallel. Historically, the Jews were set up to be the moneylenders, the tax collectors, to be the middlemen for the people who really had the power. So people would blame the Jews instead of the real ruling class. So what do you see? We see these reactionary Arab regimes blaming Zionism for their problems instead of the real powers, the British, the French, the Americans, the multinational corporations, who are really oppressing. We're essentially setting Israel up. I mean, I've talked to at least a half dozen Arab foreign ministers and assistant foreign ministers. I've asked, how can you still be friendly with the United States given all the support they give for Israel and how anti-Palestinian they are? And they've all said to me, in one way or another, oh, your ambassador or your diplomats told me that the Jews really run foreign policy and that they don't really have a choice. Does that sound familiar? Oh, we're not responsible. It's that rich cabal of Jews behind the scenes that really run everything. That's old-fashioned anti-Semitism. That's all it is. Trying to get the U.S. off the hook. That's wrong. It's this myth that U.S. policy is pro-Israel. It's not. If we really cared about Israel, we'd apply a little bit of tough love, because Israel would be far more secure within its internationally recognized borders than the policies that it's carrying out today. I remember Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein, the top and the high of the peace process, we must keep aid to Israel at current levels. And the only reason they could cite was the massive arms procurements by Arab countries. They didn't mention anywhere in that letter that 80% of those arms also came from the United States. If we were really concerned about Israel's security, we'd stop sending arms to these reactionary family dictatorships and others that refuse to even recognize Israel. What we need to do, I think, is to really organize not against Israel, not against Zionism, but against the U.S. role of the Middle East, which is what's really screwing things up. The U.S. is trying to get these Semitic cousins. It's this classic divide and rule, frankly, is what it is. That's what it is. We need, can you imagine a Middle East where you have Israeli technology, Palestinian industriousness, and Arabian oil wealth? Think of what that could do to transform the region. What would that mean to our arms exporters? What would it mean to our oil companies? What would it mean to the national security managers? This is not about Israel versus Palestine. This is not Zionism versus Palestinian nationalism. Both, I believe, are legitimate national liberation struggles of historically oppressed people, which tragically desire the same piece of real estate. The Palestinians already gave up 78% of Palestine in the Oslo Accords by recognizing Israel within its internationally recognized borders. They're just asking for the 22% remaining. But Clinton and Gore and all those people are saying, oh, that's too much. You need to accept less. You need to take just a portion of that with all this network of roads and settlements and whatever, which would make a totally unviable kind of territory. But what's at stake here is not, again, it's not Israel versus Palestine. It's those who believe in the right of self-determination versus those who believe in the right of conquest. It's those who believe in the rule of law versus those who believe in the might of military power. It's those of us who believe that U.S. aid should be conditional on respect for human rights and international law versus those whose biggest aims are the profits of American arms merchants. So I invite you to join me not to attack Israel, not to attack Palestine. There are many criticisms we can have for both sides, but to see where the real enemy is, namely U.S. foreign policy, and we need to put our energy there, and we have to if there's ever going to be peace in the Middle East. Thank you.